Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Retro Film Reviews. This one is celebrating the 30th anniversary of the theatrical release of Edward Scissorhands. And I have the 25th anniversary Steelbook Blu-ray in my hands, if you're watching this on YouTube. And yes, it's the film that I believe made Johnny Depp a A-list star in Hollywood, even though his debut film was A Nightmare on Elm Street in 1984, which I covered for my October Virtual Film Review. And this one is directed by Tim Burton and would be the first in a long line of collaborations between Johnny Depp and Tim Burton, which of course Johnny Depp stars as the titular character, Edward. And we also have quite a few big name stars featured in this film. We have Winona Ryder as Kim, Diane Weiss as Mother Peg, Anthony Michael Hall as Jim, who is Kim's boyfriend. We have Kathy Baker as Joyce. I'm looking at the list over right here. We have Vincent Price as the inventor who created Edward. Alan Arkin as Bill. And let's see. And recently passed away, Conchata. I believe that's how it's pronounced, Conchata Farrell, as Helen in this film, who, of course, everyone remembers her from Two and a Half Men. And then this one, I believe it's pronounced Olan Jones. She's Esmeralda, the crazy religious woman in this movie, who I've seen her in other stuff. I can't remember exactly where else I'd seen her, but the only other movie that I can remember that I'd seen her in is the first Beethoven movie. She's the woman, the biker woman that comes in, and Beethoven pees on her at the pet shop, which I haven't seen those movies in a very long time. I've been really wanting to check those out again, but yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of Tim Burton films, and I've loved almost all of them. I mean, some of them are, you know, like his Planet of the Apes movie was okay, you know, not the best. Mars Attacks, I know it has a cult following, you know, I couldn't really get into it personally, but like, I love Beetlejuice, I love Batman and Batman Returns, of course, Edward Scissorhands, Ed Wood, I enjoyed Sleepy Hollow, I also love the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Sweeney Todd, Big Eyes, that's another great movie of his, Big Fish, and Alice in Wonderland films that he produced as well, Corpse Bride, The Nightmare Before Christmas as well. But out of all those films of his that I've seen and enjoyed, I honestly would say that Edward Scissorhands is probably my favorite. And the big reason why is because just how such a beautiful story that is told, where essentially Edward is, I mean, let's just say he's not human. That's barely what it is. He's the product of Vincent Price's character, the inventor, who's literally just the inventor. He doesn't have an actual name, and he, in this castle that he lives in, he's an inventor. He had all these machines. He was making cookies and all these nice little things, and one day just had a little cookie that was cut in the shape of a heart and just held it up to one of his machines, and he was inspired that, you know, like Geppetto creating Pinocchio, like, let me create a human being, and that's how he created Edward. And you know, the tragic part of the story is that he died before he could give him his hands. And that's why Edward is left with his scissor hands. And, you know, Edward was left in that big castle at the end of this road to just fend for himself, essentially. And just the neighborhood that this all takes place in, for majority of the movie, at least, it is so, I mean, they never say exactly where they live, either. That's another thing that, you know, rewatching it again a few minutes ago, they never say where they live. They never say where this town is, but just the houses are all these very bright colors, like bright greens and blues and yellows and oranges and reds and purples, and all the cars are the same way as well, you know, and it's just, it is very much a product of the ever imaginative mind of Tim Burton. And one of the things that, I mean, and I noticed it years ago, many, many years ago, but just rewatching it again, it's just like, when all the wives of the neighborhood, after Peg, she's an Avon, door-to-door salesman or saleswoman rather, or salesperson, whatever is the politically correct term for that. And she, the movie opens with her going door to door selling Avon products, and she decides to go to that castle at the end of the dead end road, where she finds Edward and decides, she's gonna take him in, and he's gonna live with them. And all the wives of the neighborhood, they see her driving down the street with him in the car, and they all converge on that corner that they just refer to. They just when they were all on the phone with each other, just says, "I'll meet you on the corner." So I guess that's their meetup spot for gossip. And then all the husbands are coming home from work, and they're all arriving at the exact same time. Just one after the other, boom, 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 boom. And then when they show them the next morning, all of them leaving for work, they're all leaving for work at the exact same time. And it's just, I mean, not saying that that's completely unrealistic, but it's something that is not at all surprising to see in a Tim Burton movie. It's just how I see that, at least. But yeah, Diane Weiss, she was also the mother in Lost Boys, and she was also in Parenthood, the Parenthood movie that I absolutely love very, very much. And The Birdcage is another great film that she was in. And I feel like she's one of those actresses that I just feel like doesn't get enough love and attention for the great performances she's given over the years, over the many works that she's done. And then Alan Arkin in here, he plays her husband, and just his performance, I just absolutely love it, because he, the way I interpret it at least, is like he's very, most of the time he's very sarcastic and kind of like, "I don't give a shit" kind of thing. It's like really like he would rather be doing anything else kind of attitude is how I interpreted it. I don't know if others see it that way, but just that's how I see it whenever I'm watching this movie. Like when they have when they're all having dinner for the first time with Edward there, that he's just kind of, like watching him trying to eat, and then the Edward has the little pea. With a little green pea right there, and he's trying to eat, and he's just sitting there, just, if you're watching me on YouTube, you can see my face. He's just like watching him, and then when he doesn't get it, he's just, it's just, I don't know, it's just funny. His performance is probably is one of my favorite things about this. But then again, it's Alan Arkin, and everybody loves him. But it's just, yeah, the story itself, just, yeah, because he's trying to find his place in this new environment, trying to adapt to this new world that he's never been in, because his entire life up to that point was in that castle that he was created in. He has no knowledge of the outside world, which is something that is very prevalent throughout, where he's having a hard time trying to find the right phrasing for it. Trying to, I mean, I want to say adapt, but I'm trying to think of a better word than adapt. I don't know, but and with Anthony Michael Hall as Jim, he's Kim's boyfriend, and he's very convincing as the asshole boyfriend in this film, because up until that point he had been the nerdy guy in all the John Hughes rap movies in the 80s, Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, all those things. Was he in Pretty in Pink? But yeah, he was definitely 16 Candles, Weird Science, Breakfast Club. Yeah, he was the loser nerd that was always picked on by everybody. But in this one, he's growing up, he's maturing, and he gets to play the asshole this time. And I remember reading a story many, many years ago about that people thought that he was actually on steroids, because he was much bigger than he was in the in those John Hughes movies, and it's just like he grew up. That's literally all it was. Because I don't even think it's like I don't know what they never really explain what jobs anyone has in this movie. Jim's dad is very financially set and lives very comfortably is probably the only way I can describe it. And there's the part where, because Edward, when, as soon as Edward sees the family photos, when he goes into to the Boggs family home, and he sees Kim for the first time, it's like he's, you know, I guess like this take a phrase from the Twilight movies, he imprinted on her. He was instantly in love with her, you know, that he would do anything for her, and we see that very much throughout as the story progresses, that he's just so in love with her, you know, not like, you know, obvious in love like most romantic comedies would be, but it's very obvious that he's very fond of her and cares very much for the family, but especially for her, and he'll do anything for her if she just asks. And we see that when Jim tries to get him to help break into his father's whatever, you know, room that he has all his stuff that Jim wants to sell, and, you know, so he can get a van with a mattress in the back, which is just, yeah. So I don't know, is that still a thing? I don't know if it still is, and if it is, I've never experienced that. I don't know. I mean, just about in my mid-30s at this point, and I never experienced anything like that, so I don't know, so I can't really comment. But if that's still a thing these days, somebody let me know, because I just always thought that kind of thing is ridiculous. And then Edward gets caught, and he's arrested, and that's when the police station doctor or psychiatrist or whatever he is, after examining him, he says, like, his... You know, he's an imaginative character with the gardening that he does, the gardening sculptures, and giving haircuts for the dogs of the neighborhood, and haircuts for the wives of the neighborhood, and, you know, that he has no real, trying to think of the right words for this, like, I don't know, that I'm having a hard time coming up with the right words. Somebody will probably help me out with that. His perception of right and wrong, and, you know, morality, and, you know, laws and things like that, like, he doesn't really understand those things, because, again, he was always in that castle up on the hill and never acclimated himself. That's the word I was looking for, that, you know, before, that's acclimated himself to society. So, yeah, he doesn't understand the way humans are, but he is still very much, I was going to say a good human being, but he's a kind creature, you know, very kind, very loving, and, you know, I guess I would say optimistic and hopeful might be the right words to describe, I'm not sure. I would say the second day, full day that he's there with staying with the Boggs family, when he does the cutting the bushes, he creates a T-Rex, and then he creates one for the family, we see that he has the imagination, like that, but also we also see that when Peg first enters the grounds of that castle area that he lived in, where we see, like, the big, like, the fountain that has the hand, and then, like, a little dragon thing, you know, that looks like it's going in and out of the grass, some more dinosaur and other creatures that look like that, you know, in the gardens, and then they show him that he's doing that for other houses in the neighborhood as well, and then Kathy Baker's character, Joyce, she's kind of the neighborhood slut, is... You know, put it as plainly as I can, it's basically what she is, because even though she's happily married, you see her hitting on the plumbing guy that's there, fixing her dishwasher, and then she's, like, infatuated with Edward, and when she brings him to this salon that they're going to open up for him to give, you know, haircuts and such, she takes him to the back room and tries to seduce him, but then he walks out. And, you know, but then, and then after that is when we get the whole sequence with the, you know, breaking into the thing in Jim's family's house, and that's when the neighborhood kind of just turns on him. After they had accepted him and been so, you know, loving and welcoming towards him, that moment they just flip the switch, and in Joyce, she flips it completely and starts playing the victim as if she always knew something was wrong with him, which, I always knew that was part of the story before, but just watching it this time now, you know, I don't know, it just really bugged me this time. I don't know why now, it really just sucked with me, because she says something, like, when they all met, they met on the corner to gossip about it, and she was saying something like, you know, like, all along, I always knew there was something strange about that man, or whatever it was that she said, and yeah, and then also, like, yeah, when they're all on the phone gossiping again, talking about, like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, they got that teenage girl in the house. You know, after what happened to me, who knows what could happen. You know, again, just painting it as if, you know, yeah. You know, basically painting him to be not what he actually is. You know, painting him as the bad guy, even though he's done nothing wrong. He's an innocent being. He's essentially an innocent child in this story. But because of that one incident, that cancels out everything else he had ever done for anybody else. Which is sad, because that happens a lot in real life. You can do so many great things for so many people, be so loving and all these things, but one slip up, and that's all they ever remember. It's unfortunate that's how the world works, you know. And that's a lot of celebrities have to deal with that too. Like, you know, they can do so many, you know, I think even I would even compare it to something that Joel Schumacher sort of said a while back, and, you know, and he passed away a few months ago as well. Rest in peace to him. Said something like, you know, when he's talking about filmmaking, it's like, if a movie is great, everybody gets credit, but if the movie is bad, the director gets all the blame. That's kind of the thing. And it could be that they could make, and with directors, like, they could have a whole line of great movies. They have the one movie that doesn't do so well, and suddenly they're a terrible director. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but yeah, they always remember. Everyone always remembers the one bad thing you did, or the one mistake you made, and that negates anything else you've ever done or will ever do. And that's just very sad. But that's essentially what happens to Edward in this story. You know, him helping Jim to attempt to break into his father's safe or locked whatever room in the house so that he can steal the shit and sell it so he can get the cash to buy a van with the mattress in the back. But that one incident just undoes everything else, and it's really sad to watch. You know, especially, like, you know, like I said, now I'm an adult, I understand the stories more, you know, because when this movie came out 30 years ago, it was, yeah, exactly 30 years ago that this is going up, December 7th, 1990. See, I was only 3 years old at the time, so I couldn't have really remembered seeing it in theaters, but I remembered seeing it a lot on TV in the years after that, and then eventually getting the Blu-ray that I have right now, and, you know, I've always loved the movie, you know. But as a kid, you don't always pay attention to these little details. You pay more attention to them as you get older, as your brain matures, and as your mind matures, and you develop, I guess, a sense of morality and other things like that, and little details like that in stories like this, you know, you pay attention to them more now. At least I do. I don't know about anybody else. That's just how I am. And yeah, like, now I see how the whole neighborhood, with the exception of the Boggs family, everyone else was just so quick to flip the switch on Edward because of that one incident. And it's sad, so sad that happened to him, because he didn't know better. I mean, he knew it was Jim's house. We find that out a little bit later. He knew it was Jim's house, and he only agreed to do it because Kim asked him. Which, again, like I said, it showed that he was willing to do anything and everything for her, because he loved her. He never says the words, but he loved her. That much is obvious. And when she realizes that, like, she's just like, oh my god, you know, and she feels so horrible about that she asked him to do that, and he only did it because she asked him. And then Jim, you know, it was always, just like I said, he's just a complete fucking asshole in this story. And yeah, anyone who liked Anthony Michael Hall from the John Hughes films, seeing him in here, probably just hated his fucking guts. And hey, I can't blame him. He played a very convincing dick in this movie. And I don't feel bad. And I didn't. If you're invested in the story as much as I get, no matter how many times I see this movie, you don't feel bad at all when anything happens to Jim after that point. Yeah, because Jim gets cut up on his arm after him and his buddy almost run over the brother Kevin, played by his name. I'm looking at it right here, Robert Oliveri, who was the younger kid in Honey I Shrunk the Kids, the one with the glasses, the youngest brother. And he was also back in Honey I Blew Up the Kid. He was, you know, hanging out with a friend, and he was walking home, and Jim and his buddy, that I think he called them Pig, is the name, or something like that, or Pigs, whatever the fuck his name is, that they're driving down and almost run over Kevin, and Edward runs out there and tackles him to the ground to try to save him, and in his excitement of trying to, you know, check if Kevin is okay, he's, you know, his sister's fingers are cutting up Kevin's face, and everyone thinks that he's hurting him. And again, that's where we see, like, the whole neighborhood had just essentially turned on him, you know, regardless of everything else he had already done for them at that point, which is just, yeah, so sad to watch. But there are some lighter moments and some funny moments, like when Kim returns home from after being in the mountains with her boyfriend and everybody else for the weekend or whatever, and she sees Edward in her bed, because that's where the mom Peg put him, and it's a water bed. And I've never slept on a water bed, but I've laid down on them before, and I haven't done so in a very long time, so I don't know how I would feel about them now. But anyways, you know, Kim has a water bed, so when she freaks out and sees Edward in the bed, he freaks out and pops the mattress completely, and water shooting everywhere. Then Bill, you know, Alan Arkin's character, he takes Edward down to the basement so he can sleep on the sofa bed, the pull-out bed, or whatever you prefer to call it, the sofa bed, pull-out couch, whatever, hide-a-bed, I don't know. I was watching the Home Alone movies before this one also, so, you know, that's what they called it in that one. That he takes him down to the basement where they have, the little pull-out couch bed, and then he has a bar set up in the corner, and he decides to give him a drink, and he tells him it's lemonade, but, you know, we all know what it really is. And then Edward takes a drink, and he's drunk, which is just so funny. So because he can't lift up the glass, he has to drink it through a straw, and he has just one of the funniest reactions to it. He's like, yeah, and it's just funny to watch him. And then when Peg and Kim come down so that, you know, she can properly introduce Kim to Edward, we see Edward is just drunk, and he falls off the stool because he's passed out drunk at that point, and it's just funny. But yeah, after, that we also, like, it was, and after the, because it ends on around Christmas, I don't know if it's Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, but it's around Christmas time, which is why, you know, people want to make the arguments of what is or isn't a Christmas movie. I'll say, hey, Edward Scissorhands is a Christmas movie, because, one, it was released during Christmas time, and it features a significant sequence during Christmas time. And because why the fuck not? And so, yeah, but And we see that when they're setting up their Christmas tree, because they're supposed to have an annual, they have an annual Christmas party that they usually do. And we see that Edward's in the backyard. He has a stack of ice blocks, and he's carving an ice sculpture of an angel. And Kim sees this, and she's just so, because it had never snowed in that town, is one of the things that they mention at the beginning and at the end of the movie, but it's snowing, that, she's just dancing in this makshift snow that's, with the shavings of ice from the sculpture that he's making. And she's just so, like, in the moment and loving everything about it. And then Jim shows up and yells at Edward, and then, being distracted, cuts Kim's hand, and that's where everything just goes downhill from there. And then we have also a very great score from Danny Elfman, which I know a lot of DCEU fans are not fond, though, especially the Zack Snyder DCEU fans are not fond of his score for Justice League, which honestly it's not a bad score, it just didn't work for this film. And that they hate how the narcissistic comment of this Batman only has one theme, which yeah, I agree that was a very stupid comment about him, but he has many great scores, and his score that he does for this for Edward Scissorhands is very beautifully done, very very emotional at some parts, and particularly during this part right here, which I guess you could say is the theme, so the theme for Edward Scissorhands, the music that plays. I'm not gonna imitate it. I was about to, but I stopped myself. And just anyways, yeah. And then after Jim catches, sees Edward, and he cut her hand, and then she goes inside with the mom to clean up the wound. And Jim's just yelling at him, saying, like, it's like, he's like, no, you can't touch anything without destroying it. And, who do you think you are? Blah, blah, blah. And he yells at him, tells him to get out of there, which is just funny because that's not Jim's house. That's not his yard. He doesn't have the authority to dismiss him from somebody else's yard. But yeah, again, that's the shows how much of a narcissist and how much of an asshole he is. But Edward, feeling rejected by the community, he goes out there, he rips off the clothes that Peg had given him at the beginning of the movie, and he destroys one of the garden sculptures that he made for one of the neighbors, pops a tire for somebody's car, and for Esmeralda, because she, again, super religious, kept warning everybody that he is a demon from he is a creature from hell brought on by Satan and all that. And he decides to cut up a little garden thing for her outside of her window of a demon with Christmas lights for the teeth and the eyes, and it's a pretty cool sculpture, I must say. Her reaction to it is just, I don't know, I it makes me smile, but at the same time it's like she's so horrified at that by that sight, because again, she is so deeply devout in her faith that she believes Edward to be a spawn from a demon creature spawned from hell, that and he creates this garden sculpture for her, and it's because again he was he feels rejected by the community, so he's retaliating, and that's what he did, and then they all converge on the corner, to say, like, he did, have you seen him? He did this, he did that, this. And the police officer that had arrested him for after the incident at Jim's house, he's coming by to look for him, and that's where it leads to the part where I said that Jim and his buddy drunk driving, they almost run into Kevin, and Edward saves Kevin, but then he cuts up his face, in the excitement of the moment, and Jim runs over, tries to tackle him as well, and he's, trying to beat him up. Edward cuts his arm up, and then Edward is chased back up to the castle. And Kim follows suit to make sure that he's all right, because, again, through the course of the film, she grows to care for him very much as well. And she says, she was she thought that he was dead because the officer was shooting his gun in the air, making sure that it doesn't come back down. But then we see Jim followed him into that castle as well, and he has a gun. And he's very ready and willing and happy to try to kill Edward. One of my favorite moments from that part, especially, just in the whole film, when Edward just finally has enough of it, and he kills Jim with just a simple quick stab in the stomach or lower chest, I don't know exactly, but it's somewhere it's in his torso, you know, just gently pushes him towards the window, releases, and then Jim falls to his death. And one of my other favorite shots, like the cinematography for this film is absolutely beautiful as well, in my opinion. And one of my favorite shots in this entire film, three of my favorite shots. First one is when Peg is driving up to the castle, that first image of her, that first shot of her, we see the castle all the way in the distance, and her car, her yellow car, just driving up that dead-end road towards the castle. And also when she gets inside the castle and she goes up the stairs, the faraway shot of her going up the stairs is one of my favorite shots as well. But then the other one is when Edward is running back towards the castle with the police car right behind him is one of my favorites as well. For that, I don't know what it is about that one specifically, but it's just one of my favorites. It just is. Edward, seeing all the rest of the people in the neighborhood, coming up to the house, they see dead Jim on the floor, or Jim dead on the floor rather, trying to be grammatically correct, and you know, Edward and Kim, they just look at each other, and Edward just says goodbye, and Kim, all emotional, gives him a kiss and says I love you, and this is probably the first time. And the many times that I've watched this movie, I've watched it so many times, that for this time, that moment brought me to tears. I don't know what it was that triggered me to start crying at that moment, but something did. And I'll probably be spending the next few days trying to figure out exactly what it was that made me have that kind of reaction to that. But it's just, again, it's just such a beautiful, beautiful movie, beautiful story. And after Kim and Edward say their goodbyes, she goes down there and finds, you know, one of the old dusty pieces of equipment that has, you know, a hand just like Edward's hand with the scissors. She grabs it and convinces the neighbors that he's dead and shows off the hand as if it's his severed hand to convince them that yes, he is dead, that, you know, Edward and Jim, they killed each other. So, and then the movie ends with older Kim as a grandmother, because that's how the movie starts. It's, you know, grandmother telling her granddaughter the story of the man with scissor hands. And yeah, and then that's how it ends as well. We see, you know, that she was explaining about with the snow that, you know, before Edward came down, it never snowed, and afterwards it did. This line that she says, if he weren't up there right now, I don't think it would be snowing. And we see, because he's doing more of the ice sculptures, and one of the ice sculptures is of her when she was dancing in the snow, like it was before. And that's another little moment that actually made me feel a little teary-eyed, because, again, I've seen this movie so many times. I've probably seen this. This is probably Tim Burton movie that I've seen more than any others, even more than his Batman movies. And just for whatever reason, on this particular viewing, her saying I love you, and then the ice sculpture that he made of her made me cry. I don't know why. It just did. And then we get the beautiful music from Danny Elfman once again in that scene. Yeah, it's just, like I said, it's just such a beautiful, beautifully done story. And like I said, this is the film that I feel is what made Johnny Depp an A-list Hollywood star. Because, yeah, he first introduced in A Nightmare on Elm Street. He was also in Platoon. And then he had 21 Jump Street as well. But then this film, like I said, is what made him a star. Because this time he was the leading man of the movie. And Edward's in the Nightmare on Elm Street, he was a, I won't say as a B-list character, but he was not the lead. I would probably say maybe he was third billing, if you want to look at it that way. I'm not really sure how that works, but he plays Heather's boyfriend in that movie, which I've already talked about in that retro review I did, and then in Platoon he's one of the soldiers in that one, and then he was one of the leads of 21 Jump Street, and then he's the leading man of Edward Scissorhands, and it would go on to have quite the career, and up until recently with his, troubles that he's been having with ex-wife Amber Heard, which, well, depending on what side of that story that you're on, it's a lot of passion and anger from both sides, whether you're supportive of Johnny, supportive of Amber, a lot of passion and anger being thrown out at each other for that one. His career started with The Nightmare on Elm Street, but to me, this film, Edward Scissorhands, is what launched him into being a Hollywood superstar. And you know what? It's a great, great one. It's a great film to put him on that rocket and sending him straight into the moon, or onto the moon, or whatever the hell phrasing you can think of for that one. But anyways, yeah. Like I said, it's out of all the Tim Burton films that I've seen in my life, the Pee Wee Herman movie that Tim Burton did, that was his first film, Beetlejuice, Batman Returns, Sleepy Hollow, Ed Wood, Planet of the Apes, Mars Attacks, Big Fish, Big Eyes, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Sleepy Hollow, Edward Scissorhands is my favorite. Yeah, I don't know why. It just is. And yeah, that's gonna do it for this edition of Retro Film Reviews. I hope you all enjoyed hearing me talk about Edward Scissorhands for the last almost 40 minutes now. And if you'd like to check out other retro film reviews that I've done on here, you can check out my Nightmare on Elm Street one that I did back in October. I also did one for the Mortal Kombat movie from 1995. Was it 95 or 94? Anyways, No Holds Barred, Beetlejuice. No, I haven't even done Beetlejuice yet, but I'm going to. Addams Family, the double feature Addams Family Values that I did. No Holds Barred. Shit, I'm trying to think of the other one. Masters of the Universe, Lion King, 1994, Adventures of Baron Munchausen, all those retro film reviews, and I have many more coming up. I have a little list of which ones that I plan on doing next, and I was gonna do one for the month of November, but I forgot because just I had a lot of other stuff going on, that needed my attention. But I'll make up for it by doing a bonus one this month. Yeah, and you can also check out my other movie reviews that I have on here, my worst to best rankings, video game reviews, which I have one coming again sometime this month, and other podcast episodes and book reviews that I started doing with the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and just, yeah. If you're not subscribed to the Menacize Podcast, you can do so by just hitting the little button on the YouTube channel right there that I'm pointing at for this video. And hit the notification bell so you stay up to date. Or if you prefer the audio-only version, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, and Anchor, all the direct links to all of those are in the description for this episode. And you can also stay in touch with me on my social media. Those direct links will be there as in the description as well. Twitter, Instagram, Vero, Snapchat, my wrestling group Facebook page that I have on there, Down for the Count. So you can support the Minutize Podcast by joining my Patreon for $1 a month. You can also check out the Minutize Podcast store. Those links are in the description. You can also please contribute to the Autumn Snyder AFSP Tribute Fund. That link is in the description. My birthday fundraiser that I have in the description as well from my Facebook page. For that one, it's also AFSP. My friend Julie's GoFundMe. For her very, very important court case that she has growing. And yeah, thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. Love and appreciate every single one of you who do. And hope you all are staying safe, taking care of yourself and your loved ones, and you're enjoying yourselves this holiday season. And this has been the Retro Film Reviews from the Minute Tides Podcast. My name is Julian, and I will see all of you on the next one.